What you see is what you get.
Hello, my name is Pastor Chris Miller, and I am your host on the PC Speaking Podcast, where we are equipping Christians for life. Hello, and welcome back to the Book of Jonah. We are on week three, or part three this week, and today is the day we get to the big fish, which is what people often think about when they think about the Book of Jonah, or when you mention Jonah. And I've caught a lot of fish in my life, and even a few that were quite large fish, and the belly of a fish is not a place I would care to have to spend any time at all. Unfortunately, this fish that swallows Jonah doesn't actually get that much attention in the Bible. We don't know that much about it, just a big fish. In some ways, I wish that the Bible talked a little more about it than it does. I think I mentioned last week that it's a pivotal point in the story, but it's not a focal point. The fish is a pivotal character in God working out his will in Jonah's life. When I talk about the fish, I often prefer to say whale. I don't know why that is, but the Bible translations I've read use the word fish, great fish, big fish, either whale or fish, whatever, I suppose. It doesn't matter that much, but we don't know that much about it other than it was big enough to swallow Jonah, which is a pretty good-sized fish. As it's only mentioned briefly, there are two verses that talk about the fish. And of course, Jonah's prayer we are reading today is from the belly of that fish. And that's about it. That's about all it has to say about the fish. And sometimes people tend to get hung up on the validity of that, because it is hard to believe somebody was swallowed by a fish and survived for 3 days. Interesting thing about that is that the fish gets a lot of attention from people, but it really doesn't get that much attention from the Bible, which I find kind of interesting. You think if the author felt the need to convince people of something, like trying to convince people that Jonah had been swallowed by a fish, he'd say more about it, spend more time explaining it. But whoever wrote it obviously wasn't trying to prove anything, because the fish is only mentioned briefly, only in a couple of verses. And we don't know who wrote the Book of Jonah for sure. Tradition says that it was Jonah. But it's likely that even if it wasn't Jonah, Jonah was telling the story to the person who actually wrote it down. And maybe that being swallowed by a fish isn't something that Jonah wanted to dwell on very much. So that's why it's not a big part of the story. That would kind of make sense to me. What we know is that Jonah was swallowed by a fish. He was carried around in the belly of that fish for 3 days. And then the fish spit him out, or vomited him up on the beach. And I don't know, for me personally, I just don't have any issue believing Jonah was swallowed by a fish and then he spent 3 days in its belly. And I'm a skeptical person, but I don't know, it doesn't bother me to believe that. I think that if God is omnipotent, then he could certainly sustain Jonah for 3 days in the belly of a fish. And if he's not omnipotent and can't do that, then he's not God anyway. So it's not that big of a deal for me personally. I know for some it might be, but the more I study, the more I learn, the more I come to a place where I believe that everyone eventually comes to a place where they either choose to believe or not believe, and there's always things that they can't fully explain. That's just the reality. They come to a place where they believe, and the evidence, or the lack thereof, being able to prove or disprove things like this, don't have that much to do with whether or not someone chooses to believe stories in the Bible. There's kind of a silly, maybe bit of a, that there's a kind of a school of thought, I guess you could say, in the world today, that where if someone's skeptical and pessimistic, that people tend to believe that's a more rational and correct way of thinking than, say, optimistic thought. And the fact is that's just not true. I don't know why we think that, but we tend to think that way. All that being said, as you'll see today, the important thing is what God does with the circumstances and what we can learn from it. That's really the point of the story. And to recap, the sailors have cast lots. They've figured out that, you know, Jonah was the reason for their troubles. He's the reason for the storm that God has hurled on the sea. And now they're trying to figure out how to survive this storm because they don't want to die. They don't want to kill Jonah either. And they've been pretty kind to Jonah. They've really made every effort to not throw him into the ocean. They've done what they could, but now they have come to a place where they are left with no other choice than to throw Jonah overboard. And we pick up today in chapter 1, verse 11, and we're going to read through to chapter 2, verse 10, if you'd like to follow along. A fair bit of reading today, about 20 verses or so. So chapter 1, verse 11, over to 2:10. And this is the focal point of this, really, is Jonah's prayer from the belly of the fish. So starting in chapter 1, verse 11, it says, "Then they said to Jonah, 'What shall we do to you so that the sea may quiet down for us?' For the sea was growing stormier. So Jonah said to them, 'Pick me up and toss me into the sea, then the sea will quiet down for you. For I know that it is on my account this great storm has come upon you.' Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to bring the ship to land, but they could not do it, for the sea grew more tempestuous against them. Then they cried to the Lord and said, 'Please, Lord, do not let us perish for this man's life, and do not make us guilty for innocent blood. For you, Lord, have done as it pleased you.' So they picked up Jonah and tossed him into the sea. Then the sea ceased from its raging. Therefore, the men were very afraid of the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. Now the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish for 3 days and three nights. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish. He said, 'I called to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. You cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All your billows and your waves passed over me. Then I said, I am cast away from your sight, yet I will look again to your holy temple. The waters encompassed me, even to my soul. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. I went down to the foundation of the mountains. The earth with its bars was around me forever. Yet you have brought up my life from the pit, O God, my Lord. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you into your holy temple. Those who follow vain idols forsake their true loyalty, but I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord.'" Verse 10, "Then the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out upon dry land." So, yeah, you can kind of see a bit of a change in Jonah's attitude there, I suppose, can't you? So the sailors, they're in a difficult place. The storm is about to tear the ship apart. They're wondering what to do, what the problem is. They cast lots. They figure out it's Jonah. They don't want to throw him overboard because they don't want to be responsible for his death. But they don't want to die either, so they have to do something. And the only option they're left with is to toss Jonah in the sea. And that's even what Jonah tells them to do. They had attempted to bring the boat back to land, tried to row it back to the land, but that didn't work. So they go with the only option they have left, and they throw Jonah overboard. And that's when the fish that God appointed comes and swallows Jonah. In that, and we're really talking about the circumstances, how God uses circumstances to work in the lives of his people and to give us direction, set our feet on the path he has for us. And there's a perpetual dilemma in understanding how God orchestrates and controls things compared to how our actions and decisions affect what he does and how much they do or don't and all that kind of stuff. That's a very difficult thing to understand. And there's different schools of thought that kind of pop up around that. But you know, our decisions and God's decisions definitely both play a part. And I think that's important to understand. Now, like he did with Jonah, he can orchestrate circumstances to send us in the direction that he wants us to go. And he can also work through circumstances that come about as a result of our decisions. And to figure out or determine how God does all of that, or how much he does that, how much he orchestrates, how much, you know, things happen just because of the way he set up creation, is less important than figuring out what he wants us to do when we are, you know, proverbially speaking, in the belly of the whale, when that's you or I in that spot. And God is using the great fish to point Jonah towards the destination God has for him. And this is one example, I think, where we could take a New Testament verse, Romans 8:28, and look at how that might work out in our lives. And Romans 8:28 says, God works all things together for good for those who love God, for those who are called according to his purpose. Jonah's view of what's right and good is currently out of alignment with God's view of what's right and good. There's dissonance between the two. But what happens here, I think, fits the description of Romans 8:28, and we can make application of that in our own lives. Jonah loves God. You know, I don't have any doubts about that. He's called according to his purpose. Obviously, God's called him to go to the Ninevites, even though he doesn't want to go there. And God is working things together for good to get Jonah moving in God's good direction. And I think it's very important to recognize that, even though Jonah is a prophet called by God, his view of the right thing is out of alignment with God's view of the right thing. And there are times in life where what we want, possibly even what we might view as right and good, may not be aligned with what God has said is right and good. You know, if it can happen to Jonah, it can certainly happen to us. And we can mean well and think we're doing the right thing, the good thing, but not be aligned with God's will. I've been around church for a while, and I've seen sometimes people who come into a church and they actually are what we would call wolves and troublemakers and things like that, but they believe they're doing the right thing, usually. You know, a wolf that attacks sheep, it's just doing what a wolf does. A wolf thinks it's doing the right thing. So sometimes what we consider doing the right thing can be out of alignment with God's will and what he wants in our lives. And knowing God, serving God, being saved, being in church, having Christian friends, doing Christian things is not a guarantee of knowing and doing God's good will. And I have no doubt that almost every, if not all, Christians would agree that that is a possibility, that we can get that wrong. But it's difficult to change course or even recognize it when it's happening in our own life. And you can look at the world, you can look at other religions, you can even look at Christians and churches and some of the things we've seen going on in the world. And people can believe and move with a lot of conviction in the wrong direction, just like Jonah did. We can actually believe in something that is different than what God says is a good thing he wants us to do. And when we do that, there's a very real possibility we could end up like Jonah in circumstances that God will use to realign us and our priorities to line up with his good will. And God works all things together for good, but what may lead to good things and be good for us may not be nice or comfortable for us. Jonah's in the belly of this fish. Okay, that's not nice. That's not comfortable, but it's good for Jonah, and it's going to lead, God's working it out for good. And occasionally, it takes hard circumstances or difficult circumstances to get us headed in the right direction. And we've probably all had times like that in our own life. And it may be our own ignorance, our own obstinance that lead to those circumstances, maybe a combination of both. But either way, having our will realigned with God's will is probably going to be an uncomfortable process. The chances of that being uncomfortable are pretty high. And it required some very extreme circumstances to set Jonah on the path God has for him, to get him going in the right direction. And like I say, most of us have probably been in a place like that at some point in our lives, and maybe not as extreme as Jonah, but a difficult circumstance God has used to set us in the right direction. And, you know, Jonah may have been very strong-willed, considering he stayed in the belly of the fish for 3 days. But there's more to Jonah's time in the belly of the fish. There's more to the time in the hard circumstance than just a simple punishment or just a like a battle of wills where, you know, Jonah finally gives up and says, okay, God, you win. I guess I'll do what you want. There's more to it than that, than going through difficult circumstances. God working things out for good often involves more than just a simple punishment or a simple battle of wills. As God works through difficult circumstances in our lives, not only do we change our direction or our orientation on where we're headed and following His will, but we also learn things as we go through that. And one is that we're not as self-sufficient as we would like to think. We've probably all heard someone say that you don't realize Jesus is all you need until Jesus is all you have. And Jonah in the belly of the big fish, the great fish, is a time of preparation for Jonah. We know that Jonah very much despises the people of Nineveh. We've talked about that. And he's, from what we know about them, that's actually not unreasonable that Jonah doesn't like these people. But Jonah's also afraid to go to Nineveh because he's afraid of what might happen to him, as any of us would be. And that's something we often come up against in serving God, is our own fear of the things He wants us to do. In my own life, you know, I still get nervous when I get up in front of people to talk, and I've been doing it for quite a while, but I still get nervous. There was a tremendous fear when I first started teaching and speaking in front of people. It's a lot better now, believe me, but it was so bad at first that, you know, I didn't know if I was going to be able to do it. But there's usually a time of preparation involved in following God's will, and working through fear is part of the preparation. Not so much doing away with that fear, because it doesn't necessarily go away, and fear is not a bad thing, but bringing fear into perspective. Fear in the right perspective is a very good thing. And I think as Jonah was praying in the dark and cold slime of the fish's belly, he began to gain perspective on his fear of the Ninevites. I think that actually helped him overcome the fear. God used it for that, as it would. If you were afraid of something like that and you spent 3 days in the belly of the fish, that would give a different perspective on the fear of the Ninevites. And have you ever been through a situation like that where you were afraid of something, and maybe you've gone through some different situations that helped you grow and maybe brought that fear into a better perspective? And there are many stories in the Bible about preparation. And there's pretty much always a time of preparation for that people go through when they're getting ready to do whatever it is God wants them to do. There was Moses, who lived in the wilderness for 40 years before he was ready to lead God's people around in the wilderness for 40 years, lead them out of slavery in Egypt. But even then, he was still afraid. There was Joseph, whose brothers sold him into slavery, very difficult, rough circumstances that Joseph went through. He was in prison. All kinds of bad things happened. He was in prison. He was a slave. And he was kind of a spoiled kid. But God uses those difficult circumstances to grow Joseph into someone who would be able to later save his people from famine. And you could probably think of some other examples as well. And when you start looking at it from the perspective of Moses and Joseph, Jonah's 3 days are intense, but they're relatively short in comparison to their experience. And when you look back over your life, you can probably see times when you went through things that God used to grow you, help you overcome fear, to grow your faith, your trust, in your confidence in Him. And you can see that place in Jonah's life in verses 7 and 9. It says, when my life was ebbing away, I remembered my Lord and my prayer came to you in your holy temple. Those who follow vain idols forsake their true loyalty, but I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay what I vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. And this is a place where Jonah recognizes God as most and highest. It's at that point where Jonah comes to the other side of the trial. And the fish, that's where the fish vomits Jonah out on the beach. And how Jonah handles God's circumstances, as difficult as this is, and as obstinate as Jonah is, there are some things he does right. And one of the things he does is when you read that in prayer, you can see Jonah, he kind of takes personal responsibility, puts his trust in God, and he takes some personal responsibility. It takes personal responsibility for, you know, running from God, I suppose. And in our culture, taking personal responsibility in difficult circumstances and working through those circumstances is not really normative. There's a lot of blame and a lot of victimhood that happens, unfortunately. And problems are very often seen as, even if I'm in a difficult time, the problems are often seen as someone else's fault. And that's kind of part of the identity politics we've talked about in the past. Or if I have problems as an adult, it's because of something my parents did when I was a kid, or the economy, the environment, whatever it might be, is a problem because of something someone else did. And some of that, you know, is not to say that those things are untrue in part, but at the same time, we'll never see the other side of a problem if we only act like a victim and blame other people and circumstances and don't take responsibility to bear up under the weight of it and, you know, take responsibility for making things better and, you know, fixing things. In counseling, sometimes, often we'll explore informative things in someone's life that happened when they were a kid. But that's not so the person can place blame. That's to figure out what the problem is to work on it. And they may not be responsible for what happened, but they're responsible for working on the problem if they want things to get better. And when we hear a term like victimhood and the need for personal responsibility, we might think about the secular world. But as you guys know, that's not really who we're talking to. I'm not talking to the secular world. Christians can cry victim just as well as any secular person. And it's not someone else's job to fix you. And blaming everyone else for a problem does not fix the problem. And I've seen that as such an issue in church that's caused so many problems, is someone, you know, who's a victim and blames everyone else for their problems. And a little later in the book of Jonah, even though he has done what God has wanted him to do, he still kind of sees himself as a victim. And he's changed his direction. And he's gone to Nineveh and he's preached, which of course we're going to get to that. But even in the end of the book, you'll see his attitude is still pretty pretty terrible. And another problem we run into is that we think, you know, I shouldn't have to deal with any problems. I should be protected from problems and that God should do that for me. There's been some problems with some preaching that have kind of taught people that. It's been very misleading for folks, because that's anti-biblical thinking. It's difficulties that God uses to help grow us. You know, in the book of James writes about finding joy in trials, because God is going to use those things to help you grow. And the Bible is very clear that people are guilty of sin, but it's coming to a point that if you tell someone that, then they think you're evil and oppressing. And again, I'm not talking about the world. I'm talking about Christians. I can't tell you how many times I have received what we might call just correspondence from folks because Christians were triggered by something I've said. And instead of taking responsibility and reflecting on that, they project blame elsewhere and play victim. But all that being said, there's more to this than just taking personal responsibility and owning up to things when we're going through a difficult time, obviously, because that's, you know, that can cross the border between Christianity and non-Christian. Anybody can do that, take responsibility and owning up to things. But as Christians, we have a very distinct advantage in these things. And in hard times, if we are willing to listen, God works all things together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And that's a principle you can see embedded in the book of Jonah and in Jonah's prayer as well. Even though Jonah's attitude may have not been that great, God still works it out for good. And for a Christian who loves God, who is working through, God is working through circumstances to bring about an intended good. And when you read back the passage again, you can see that Jonah, you know, he understands that and he has hope in that, even if Jonah doesn't fully understand what God says is good, or even if he disagrees with what God says is good. When Jonah prays, he says, I called to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. You've brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God, but I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. And Jonah knows that, you know, God is going to work things out for good. You can tell that by some of the things he says in his prayer. He's going to bring him through this. God is going to bring Jonah through this. And it wasn't only a matter of believing or not believing, because, you know, Jonah believes in God very obviously, and he believes God and what he says. But there's something underneath Jonah's rebellion, something that feeds it, that I think happens to all of us at times. What's going on here? The real problem with Jonah and what feeds his rebellion is Jonah has decided that his good is better than God's good. Jonah knows better than God does. And Jonah running away is his attempt to work things out for what he thinks is good. And the storm and being swallowed by the fish are how things work out for him. But Jonah feels that he knows better than God does. And when you think about it, when we sin, which we all do, when we do that, when we rebel, when we live contrary to God's will, that's what we're saying. Kind of like Jonah said, you know, I know better than God does. And that's kind of a hard thing to get our head around, but that's really what we're saying when we do that. And Jonah isn't just afraid to go to Nineveh, although that's part of it. It becomes very clear later that Jonah is afraid of what's going to happen if he does. He's afraid that God is going to extend mercy to the Ninevites. And he runs away to keep God from making that mistake. He thinks, you know, God's going to make a mistake if he extends mercy to the Ninevites because they shouldn't have it. They don't deserve it. And so he runs away for what he thinks is good. And when you think about it, how often do we tell God what he needs to do? How often do we tell God what is good? How often do we tell God what he needs to fix? How often do we tell him the best way that he could work things out? Well, we probably do that just about every time we pray. And so through the belly of the whale, God is working things out for good, for his purposeful good, and also for Jonah's good as well. And Jonah gains some humility. He gains some courage, or at least perspective on his fear. He gets a better view of what's good, even though I still don't think he completely agrees with God about what that is, all while taking some personal responsibility. And in difficult times, God will work out what he determines is good. And that gulp, and his good will ultimately be good for us as well, even if we don't necessarily agree with God about what is good. And it's in the place where Jonah's direction lines up with God's will that he ends up back on the beach. That's when the fish vomits him out. And so lastly, the thing that we might learn from this, and this could be something very helpful, is that when we're in the midst of a difficult time, in a storm, in the belly of the whale, whatever it might be, we should seek to align our heart, our mind, our will with God's will as quickly as possible through prayer, through confession, and through reflection, like Jonah does. See, deliverance happens not at the end of difficulty, because there's always going to be more difficulty, but when your heart and your mind align with God's will, that's where deliverance happens. In the place where we recognize God is good and right, and he's the one who delivers. And we won't get there if we remain self-reliant and see our good as better than God's good. And that's how the gospel works. You hear people who reject the gospel and reject Jesus, they often see their good is better than God's good. And when you really think about it, that's pretty much always the case. That's why people reject it, is because they think their good is better than God's good. You know, what I do is good. I don't need the sacrifice of Jesus because I'm good. And that's really saying my good is better than God's good. And we remain lost in sin and trespasses until we come to the place where we agree with God and believe the gospel and what he says about us, that we are sinful and his good is the best good. And when we come to that place, that's when we can be delivered from sin through the blood of Jesus. And in the place where we recognize that Jesus is our only hope, he is the way, he is the truth, and he is the life. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time to listen in this week. I appreciate you all very much. And next week, we'll see what happens with Jonah and the Ninevites. And I'm looking forward to talking with you again then. Thank you for taking the time to listen today. Let me know what you think in the comments. Please consider subscribing and sharing this with someone who might find it helpful.
Oh, that's good.